Wait, I'm sorry, I had meant to point to this woman before, and I, yeah, please.
Since spring and rape season are just around the corner, I was wondering what advice you might offer to the female who is conditioned from early childhood to be defenseless. In other words, you mustn't fight back. Young ladies don't do that. I have a seventh grade friend who took all she could from a junior high school boy who, and I still say that what half the problem with the males in this country is sexually, they're still hung up on the junior high school level and have never outgrown it.
That's really good.
Anyway, the young girl took all she could from him, even to the point of where he lifted her skirt. And then he came up to her and said, "Hello, slut," which is, of course, perfectly acceptable to the junior high male. And she said, "What did you say?" And he said, "Hello, slut." And she hauled off with her fist at him.
That's great. Okay, I'll repeat it. I'm sorry because I know that you all can hear here, but I guess we do have to do it for the other room, right? This woman is saying that since this beautiful woman here is saying that since spring and the rape season are right around the corner, what advice do we have for women who have been taught to be docile and to behave in a ladylike fashion and not to fight back? And she cites the example of a seventh grade student who, you know, put up with a certain amount of aggressiveness and lifting up of skirt and so on from a high school student because she was afraid or whatever. And then he said to her, then he called her a slut. And when she punched him in return, she was suspended for 3 days. But her mother said, "Good for you." So the mother, at least we're beginning to make our children understand that they will be loved if they don't play their role, which is very fundamental and important to understand. It's terribly important at every level that women fight back.
And one more question.
Okay. And that we not feel, you know, we're made to feel that somehow it's our fault. In each instance, the, you know, second class group, whatever it is made to feel it's our fault. And there was a case on the books in New York, for instance, where a 10-year-old child was raped by a family friend. And it was, eventually, he was not punished because the judge felt that because the little girl had on a sunsuit, it was incitement or enticing or something. You know, I mean, the idea of the whole thing being women's fault is something that we have to make very clear is not true. We have to fight back. We have to learn how to use our knees and our elbows. And, you know, we aren't that much weaker than men. And there's a difference in strength only during the childbearing years. Kids and old people, males and females, have the same amount of strength. And there's really very little difference even during those years. We're just trained very much not to use it, to walk around defenseless with our arms at our sides. Now, another thing that people are doing, women are doing in New York, in case it would work here, are forming rape squads. What that means is that when a woman is raped and she goes to the police and the police say, "Did you enjoy it, honey?" which is what happens. And of course, by New York state law, you have to have a witness. If somebody steals your purse, you don't have to have a witness. You can make a complaint. If somebody rapes you, you have to have a witness. Somebody has to have been standing there watching and be willing to come and be your witness. So they form rape squads, and the woman who has been raped and often brutally beaten as well, comes to the rape squad, right, and says, "Okay, here's what happened to me." They investigate to make sure that this is legit, right, that it's really a true complaint. Then they locate the man, tell his wife, tell his employer, tell all the relatives that are available, put up posters in the neighborhood with his picture on it. You know, a big picture and says, "This is, you know, meet your local rapist," and so on. And, you know, I just offer that as an example of kind of organizing what we really must do, which means take our lives into our own hands. The woman who started to speak before, and I can't see very well.
Hi,
just live with me. And I'm worried, I guess it becomes diluted generation by generation until maybe 100 years from now we won't have as much of this crown, but I don't want to wait that long. And at the same time, I can't be in two places at once. And the kind of daycare that's available, especially for a pre-nursery school child, is really not satisfactory by my standards. And I'd like both of you to comment on what someone who's already in a dual role can do, because I have the skills to go out and work, but I have the responsibilities.
Okay, let me try to repeat that, if I can do you justice. This is a woman who is a lawyer and who was raised by a non-sexist mother and so managed to graduate from law school and so forth. Now she has two little girls and, they have trucks and the father takes care of them too and takes them to the office with him, and they're trying very hard, not to raise them in a sexist fashion. But the child care available is so bad that she feels she wants to stay home with them or has to stay home with them in order to give them a decent upbringing. What can she do?
I was thinking myself about asking you to just come and stay around us so we can study from you. I mean, if you were brought up, how could you be brought up in a non-sexist situation when the whole of what we have is one? If you were brought up by your mother, you had to be brought up in a sexist situation, because unless your father spent the same time with you as your mother, I think it's almost impossible. But I think that you need to, something happen, because you need to try and get rid of the feeling that you should stay at home. Why not your husband? You are a lawyer, you have a profession, you want to do what you want to do, but if you really feel that you have the choices and you want to stay at home, it should still be no problem, because you can still do things with them and they can still grow up in the community with people if that's what you have time to do. I have three daughters. One is 12, one is 7, and one is 1 year old. And I don't feel any problem at all about being away from them when I'm away from them, they're being in the child care center because I'm still in there, and that I'm a board member of the child care center. The values that are going on in there are not separate from mine. In my children, the values that are going on in other, that are being strengthened in other children, or their values and their parents' values, or whoever they got them from. We really changed the curriculum. My daughters are very active in their individual lives, what they are as individuals. My husband is into his thing, that individual thing. And we do things communally together, we do things together a lot. And when I'm with the kids, I'm really with them. I'm with them individually, and I'm with them alone by themselves. One would go to the movie with Joni or somebody in the community, and I would spend time with Patrice, just talking with Patrice, while Clarence has Angela. I think that you should try and lose the feeling that you really should adopt the responsibility totally. If your mother could do that and not bring you up in a sexist type of a relationship and feeling.
But yeah, it isn't, children are a community responsibility, and I'm very glad that some women brought their children today. Of course, there should be child care for anything like this, so that women can come. But I'm very glad that you came and brought children and that you didn't feel, one of the children was making a little noise here, and sometimes that happens, a woman gets up and walks out, and we always say, please don't go. Because if we can put up with the B-17, the noise pollution, the air, and the air and so on, and the automobiles, why not children? Children belong to all of us, and they're all of our responsibilities. And another thing to this woman's question is that cooperative child care centers or community-controlled child care centers have often sprung from a very small beginning. And Dorothy's center sprang really from Dorothy with a lot of guts walking around you know, knocking on doors and saying, look, we all have this need, let's organize around it and get together. And the beginning of the child care center was in someone's apartment, even. So it's possible to do that. If the child care available to you is really unsatisfactory, to do that with just 5 or 6 or 12 other parents, and to start there, and to start demanding, you know, city and state funds, and to build on that.
I really believe that if there is an unsatisfactory child care center, we have the responsibility for changing it for those children who are in it, and not to leave it. I began working at developing a daycare center because there wasn't any. You know, it really came out of that kind of need. But I have just as much of a need to make the child care center in Cleveland one that's developmental for the children that are in it as I do in New York. I mean, because I really believe that they should have that kind of a chance.
And if you want a consultant, anybody who's interested in child care, if you want a consultant to come on the methods of non-sexist, you know, some input, I mean, just such a simple thing as having male teachers as well as female teachers is revolutionary. I mean, somehow we just don't think about it. Or the teaching materials, or the kinds of books that exist, and so on. This thing called the Women's Action Alliance at 200 Park Avenue, a free office, I might add, and it's an apology for the Park Avenue address. They're in culture shock to find themselves on Park Avenue. Can send to you a consultant with exactly that kind of information, bibliographies, suggestions of toys, practices, and so on.
I am extremely reluctant to do this, but it is my very unpleasant job to say that our time has passed up. I have two announcements. One is that we will have a Women's Week at CSU May 1st through 5th. It's still in the planning stages, and for any who would like to participate, if you would come tomorrow to University Hall, room 2808B, at 12 noon. The other is that although the formal part of this program is over, Gloria and Dorothy will be at Fat Glenn's for a rap session for the next 30 or 40 minutes, so you're all welcome to come there, buy your own beer, and talk on a more informal basis. Thank you very much, Dorothy and Gloria, for being here.